preserve. Now, I always wondered, when the Jews were walking around Mitzrayim during the Makot, and they ran into their Egyptian friends, Egyptian neighbors, or maybe their Egyptian taskmasters. Like, I wondered, like, you know, it's hailing outside, fire and water, destroying, creating havoc. You know, can you imagine the Jews saying, "Hey, heard it rained pretty hard on your side of town, no?" Now, it's just like, what was that interaction like during the Makot? I mean, I get it, during the first Makah of Dam, so the Jews are hard at work, and the Jews' water is clear, and when the Egyptian is taking that same break while he's outside whipping or watching the Jew, so his water is red. I get that. Look at Kinim. So I got it, the Jew is, you know, working really hard, and, you know, the Egyptian taskmaster, well, probably doesn't have any hair, but he's scratching away. Like, what happened once it got really, really bad? Now, the Egyptian walks in, missing a couple fingers. And they say, "Wow, I see you had some, you know, pesty wild animals last night." Like, were the Jews still going to work during the Makot? I mean, at some point, did the Makot create this division, fear, between the Egyptians and the Jews? And, like, did slavery stop? Was it going on the whole time? So, for the first time, I found a beautiful explanation in a sefer called Ketav HaKabbalah, Rav Yaakov Mecklenburg, 19th century. His friends, many of whom you know, the Malbim or the Meshech Chachma. He also has lots of friends that are maskilim, that are part of the Enlightenment, Geiger and others. So perhaps he's a little lesser known, but he has a brilliant parish I wanted to share with you this morning. The end of Chamishi, there's a pasuk. There's actually two pasukim. The problem is that one is the last pasuk in Chamishi, and the other is the first pasuk in Shishi. So when we read it, we're not used to reading them together, because there's always, you know, there's a separation in between, and, you know, there's a mitzvah to talk in between Aliyot, right? So, you know, we kind of separate between the two. But when you put the two together, it's a little bit strange. The end is, we're talking about the plague of Arob, of wild animals. And comes along God, and he says, "Listen, v'fleiti bayom ha'et eretz Goshen. This plague is going to create a division. It's going to divide between my people and those people, the Egyptians and Jews. Okay? L'man te'daki, ani Hashem b'karav ha'aretz." Now everyone's going to know that I got in here in Israel, in Egypt, and I can control even here. Everyone got the pasuk? The first pasuk of Shishi reads, you ready? "Vesamti pedut ben ami uben amecha." I'm going to put, I don't know, some sort of differentiation, redemption between my people and your people. And classically, all the Mepharshim say, "Oh, it's kind of the same thing. It just means God in this makkah of wild animals is going to distinguish between Jew and Egyptian." Even a wild Ibn Ezra that, until this point, the Jews were getting the, you know, were receiving the Makot and were getting hit by the Makot just like the Jews were. But why the repetition? And different Mepharshim have different approaches. Sfarno tries to say, well, one is geographical, one is the Jews in Goshen will be protected, and the other is a Jew, even if he leaves Goshen, will be protected. Says the Ketav HaKabbalah, no, they're two entirely different things. The first pasuk is about protection from wild animals. That I got. The second pasuk is about how the Egyptians will start relating to Am Yisrael differently. And look what the pasuk says: "V'samti pedut ben amiu ben ben Mitzrayim." Starting now in the fourth makkah, after we've already done the first of the three, the first cycle of three makot, Egyptians will relate to the Jewish people differently. Until this point, they were the slave owners. They felt superior. Starting the makkah of Arov, of wild animals, the Egyptians are scared of Am Yisrael. The Egyptians are scared to walk into Goshen and to drag out their slaves. All of a sudden, the Egyptians start leaving Am Yisrael alone. Slavery, or the act of being a slave, may very well have ended by the fourth makkah. And all I want to point out is that when we think about Chumash, when we think about the Makot, we often think about 10 Makot. And, you know, in all the good films, you know, from the old Charlton Heston to Prince of Egypt, you know, the Makot is like 30 seconds on fast forward. You know, because it's all just like, boom, it happens, and we don't want to think about it. But especially if the Makot take weeks, months, maybe even over a year, depending on the Midrash, what was the process that Bnei Yisrael went through during the Makot? 10 different Makot, 3 sets of 3s and then a final hit. What was the process that Mitzrayim underwent? And I challenge all of us as we go through the Makot, as we experience over the next 2 parashiyot, the Makot, try to think about how did the Bnei Yisrael-Mitzrayim relationship change? How, from a social, political, emotional perspective, did things actually happen? How did they experience Makkah after Makkah? And just like in life, you know, you don't start high school and end high school, and like that's the end of the story. Right? You don't begin the year, you don't end the year, and the year is over, and like the only markers I have are the beginning and the end. Every marker along the way is meaningful. Every year in high school, every month, every week in yeshiva. How do we appreciate the small steps of the journey that when we look back, wow, 10 Makot, and we decimated Mitzrayim. But there were lots of really important steps along the way that I challenge everyone to pay attention to in the Parsha and to really help the story of the Makot come to life. Have a good day.